Chapter 3. The Social God. You may have heard the phrase, the Trinity. It crops up in Christian circles a lot. The word is a mixture of tri, T-R-I, which means three, as in tricycle and triangle, and unity, meaning one. That's why God is sometimes referred to as the three in one. That may sound a bit technical, but once you unpack it, it's heartwarmingly exciting. It's an aspect of the fact that God is love. Love needs an object. But if God, as some religions teach, is utterly singular, isolated and remote in an elite class of one, his love has nowhere to go. Ah yes, you say, but maybe that's why he made us, so that he had someone to love. True, as we'll see. But God was love before he made us. How could that be? Because he is a Trinity. He is one, yes, but within the oneness he exists as three persons. Maybe persons isn't the best word, but it's the one that has stuck. We could say three modes of being, or, if you're into Greek terms, three hypostases. Let's stick with persons. The three persons of the Trinity are Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and they are one. Let's take the one bit first. This aspect of the Trinity tells us that between the three persons there is absolute harmony. They are of one mind. No differences of opinion, no jockeying for position, no feeling inferior or pushed out. They exist in full agreement with each other because they are one. And what's more, love flows between them. The Father loves the Spirit and the Son. The Son loves the Father and the Spirit, and the Spirit loves the Father and the Son. So, as well as being of one mind, they are of one heart, a heart of love. This love, which, as we've seen, is the hub of God's character, has always flowed between the persons of the Trinity, giving real meaning to the phrase, God is love. That's what led John Wesley, a famous 18th century Christian leader, to refer to God as the sweet society. God could no doubt have continued forever in that happy Trinitarian love, but he decided to enlarge the circle, to extend the society. Love always makes room for others. So God created the universe and within it configured planet Earth as the focus of his plan. Having populated it with plants and animals of huge variety, he placed human beings in this glorious setting. It was they whom he would draw into his own circle of love. Caught up in a loving relationship with him, they would be his vice-regents, caring for the earth with him and on his behalf, and in doing so, they would be immensely fulfilled and happy. Love would govern everything. That's important, so hold on to it. Why? Because further down the line, things went wrong, and you'll be in a better place to grasp the process of God's getting things back on track if you have a clear grasp of his original intention. So let me say it again, God wanted a loving relationship with human beings. They would run the world for him and with him, worshipping him for his goodness in providing it for them with all its immense possibilities. They would act as his stewards in caring for it, while in the process enjoying the endless fulfillment that life on earth would provide. In setting up this scenario, God ran a risk. Love is only love if it's freely given. He could no doubt have made us as automatons, programmed to love him and incapable of not doing so. But where would have been the satisfaction for God in that? There's simply no substitute for love freely given. And the only way God could arrange for that was to grant humans freedom of choice, something love always does, for true love is never controlling. On that basis, they could respond to his love for them by loving him in return. Or they could use their freedom to reject him and do their own thing. In a test case, the well-known story of the Garden of Eden, God gave them a free choice. They rejected him and did their own thing. And that, alas, turned everything sour. Don't worry if you feel you can't take the Eden story literally. The point holds good, even if Adam and Eve and their actions are figurative for human attitudes to God generally. But surely, you say, being God and all-knowing, he must have known that that's what would happen, so why did he go ahead with it? Well, maybe he didn't know it would happen. Sure, we tend to think of God as, by definition, all-controlling, or at least as all-knowing. But it's love, not control, that is the heart of his being, and love always makes room for others. What's more, it gives them freedom to make genuine choices. And if they are free agents, making real choices in real time, God doesn't know what they will do until they do it. We could say, then, that the love that is God's essential nature makes him subject, at least to a degree, to the will and choices of us, his creatures. He doesn't know everything that will happen before it happens. He does, however, know what choices we could make and what the effects of each possibility would be. Meanwhile, he doesn't just sit back and let us get on with it. In love, he actively encourages us in the right direction. But he draws us rather than pushes us. It's the carrot, not the stick. And yes, his love is gradually steering things towards the fulfillment of his goal, so that in the end, his purpose of perfect harmony between him and his creatures will indeed be achieved. But in the meantime, God ran the risk, and humans let him down. Their bad choices put a spanner in the works. It's as if a germ that we might call sin or selfishness was set loose on society. We're all diseased and now live in a world out of kilter with God and his ways. All of us humans are messed up in one way or another. And the knock-on effect has touched every part of life and the world. We have natural disasters like typhoons, earthquakes, volcanoes and tsunamis. We have nature red in tooth and claw. We have the Anopheles mosquito and a host of deadly bacteria. We have wars, terrorism, slavery, and human exploitation. Everything is far from the perfect, harmonious world that God has always yearned for, and that you too yearn for deep down. Alienation marks the human condition. We feel alienated from the God we need, while the inner ache for him continues unabated. The God thoughts insist on coming, and we live in hope that somehow the alienation can be sorted out so that we can experience his love in full. It was towards that end that God began to steer the events of world history. Yes, history. That's no surprise. God is concerned with human beings and their affairs, so if he was going to reach them at all, he would have to do it in the context of their real lives, the society they lived in, their worldview, the geographical and political realities of their day, and the events of their routine existence. So, stand by for a bit of history.